think I was throwing out? I don't know. Bloody clothing that you were wearing? I hear the sharp inhale of his breath. Rosie, you asked me.
I didn't kill her.
His voice sounds choked.
I swear to you, I'd never do anything like that. The police think I did it, but...
He buries his face in his hands.
Christ, this sucks.
Nick. He raises his face to look at me.
Please tell me you believe me. Tell me you don't think I killed her.
That night I confronted him about her. Nick promised he would make things right. He swore it. That night, Nick was skulking around the hotel at 3 in the morning. And the next morning, the other woman was dead. Stabbed to death. And Nick is the only person who had the key to her room. I believe you. I lie. That psychic at the carnival was right. My husband is a murderer. And it's all because of me. Chapter 33. One day earlier. Even through the snow and darkness, I can see how attractive she is. She has blonde hair, the same as Christina Marsh did. She's clutching her luggage as she shuffles through the freezing rain from her car to the motel door. I watch from my perch at the bedroom window, willing her to turn around. But she doesn't turn around. She pushes the door open and goes inside. She probably doesn't know the motel's sordid history. We have quite the reputation. The Murder Motel, they called us. It's been 2 years since Christina Marsh was found murdered in room 201. For a couple of weeks, I was certain Nick was going to be taken away in handcuffs, but ultimately, they never arrested him. It's a good thing because we were broke enough as it was, and we never could have afforded a decent lawyer. But the consensus on the internet was that he murdered her. Even my family thought he was a killer. My mother called me up a week after it all went down. Come home, Rosalie. You can't stay with that man. She always called me Rosalie. Everyone called me Rosalie. Nick is the only one who ever called me Rosie. I'm not leaving my husband, I told her. He cheated on you and then killed that girl. Watch. You'll be next. Mom! But I wasn't surprised. My mother was never supportive of anything I did, including marrying Nick. It didn't matter that I loved him. She thought I could do better. Not that I could do better these days. If I weren't with Nick, I would be alone for the rest of my life. Nick has been doing what he can to make money. He took some online web design courses, and now he is doing freelance work so we don't go broke. He's been talking about trying to sell the motel, but after Christina was killed here, he can't pay somebody to take it off his hands. He usually does his freelance computer work at the front desk in the motel. Never here. He doesn't want to be around me anymore, and it's hard to blame him. After what happened with Christina, our relationship got worse, if that were possible. We barely speak 2 words to each other anymore. We haven't made love once since her death. Sometimes I'm not sure we ever will again. I see movement in the motel on the second floor. Then the lights flicker on in room 203. Nick has chosen a room for the guest. And now I get out my binoculars. Nick still doesn't know about the binoculars and that I've been using them to spy on his guests. He'd be furious. I have tried to use restraint about it. I don't spy on him all the time. For the most part, the binoculars stay shut in a drawer. But sometimes I get them out in an emergency. An attractive woman showing up at the motel counts as an emergency. Hey, it's not my fault that my husband has proven himself not to be trustworthy. Sometimes, when I'm staring across into the hotel with my binoculars, I feel ill about what my life has become. That night 2 years ago, Nick stopped me before I took all those pills in my medicine cabinet. But the truth is, I still think about it a lot. except now it's too late. I can't stand on my own anymore, even when holding on to the sink and the pills are too high for me to reach. So I keep on living, by default. I raise the binoculars to my eyes and look into room 203. Close up, she is decidedly very pretty. Maybe in her late 20s. Blonde hair. A little bony compared with Christina, but still very attractive. I watch as she paces across the room. She looks anxious. I wonder if she's in any trouble. After all, she pulled into a seedy motel in the middle of a snowstorm. Or maybe she's here to make trouble. She pauses for a moment. She walks over to the door to her room and flings it open. Nick is standing there, holding a plate of food out to her. Gosh, isn't he nice? The kind, handsome owner of the motel thoughtfully brought her some dinner. I bet he didn't even charge her, as if we could spare the money. I can just imagine her swooning over that one. I watch them chatting for a moment, wishing I could hear what they're saying. But more than that, I wish I could trust him. But I can't. Chapter 34. That morning. Nick is rifling around in our closet. I turn my chair to watch him, trying to figure out what he's doing. What are you doing?
I need to borrow your boots.
My boots?
I'm going to help this guest dig her car out, and she doesn't have any boots. I'll bring them back when she's done with them.
My jaw tightens as I remember watching that woman's pretty face through my binoculars last night. Is it really necessary for you to dig her car out?
I told her I'd help. Although, honestly, I don't think she's going anywhere until the plow comes.
Well, gee, that's so nice of you. I don't even try to keep the edge out of my voice. Nick retrieves my fur-lined black boots from the closet. I remember how warm those boots used to be. I could go out in deep snow and I wouldn't even feel it. Of course, I wouldn't feel it now either, since I can't feel my feet at all.
Rosie,
he says patiently.
I have to help her. Don't be difficult about this.
Oh, am I being difficult? He frowns.
Yes, you are.
Strange. Why would I be upset because my husband wants to help a beautiful young woman with her car? He drops the boots on the ground and sits down heavily on the bed.
Don't do this. Please.
Do what?
I've been faithful, okay?
He looks me in the eyes.
I haven't touched another woman since... Anyway, it's not like you've done anything to help.
Help what? I stare back at him. I'm stuck here in this room all the time. What am I supposed to do?
For starters, get out of this goddamn room. Let me turn the dining room downstairs into a bedroom. Let me convert the kitchen at Rosalie's and we can open it back up.
You've got to be kidding me. I punch my fist into my knee so hard it kicks up a spasm, but I just ignore it. You act like it's all so easy. It's not easy.
I know it's not easy, but
you don't know. My right leg trembles with a muscle spasm. Look, I don't want to have this conversation. Go give that woman my boots. Let her keep them for all I care. It's not like I'm ever going to use them again. I expect him to keep arguing with me like he often does, but instead he gets back on his feet.
Fine,
he snaps. Then he picks up the boots and stomps out the door. Every step he takes echoes through the entire house until the front door slams shut. After he leaves, I wheel myself over to the window, and I grab my binoculars. I shouldn't watch them, but I can't help myself. Worrying about Nick cheating on me again has become an obsession. When we were young, I always trusted him. I was never jealous. Now it's all I can think about. I peer through my binoculars, searching for that woman's car. She parked it in the lot by Rosalie's. It's a strange thing to do, considering the motel has its own lot.
Why would she have parked at Rosalie's, which is boarded up? And she didn't just park at Rosalie's. She parked all the way around back. What does she have to hide? A few minutes later, I see the two of them come into view. The woman is wearing a thick coat, but I remember catching that glimpse of her in room 203. She's beautiful, and Nick knows it. Mostly, they're digging out her car. Nick is doing most of the work because he's big and strong and he always wants to help. I watch their lips move through the binoculars. They're talking. At one point, he laughs at something she says. When is the last time I've seen Nick laugh? I swear it's got to have been a year at least. They would make a good couple. They look better together than Nick and I do these days, that's for sure. I'm sure he feels some sort of tug of attraction towards her. He's got to be tempted. Before I can stop myself, I reach for my phone. I select his number and wait for it to ring. Through the binoculars, I can tell he feels it buzzing in his pocket. He steps away from the car, pulls out his phone, and looks at the number. Will he take my call when he's with his beautiful motel guest? He does.
Rosie?
He says.
What's wrong?
Having fun digging out that car? Maybe you should have a snowball fight. There's a long pause on the other line.
I'm just helping her dig out her car, Rosie. She's stuck in the snow.
I'll bet.
Come on, Rosie. That's not fair.
Fair to whom? He lets out a long sigh.
What do you want me to do? I have to help. It's the decent thing to do.
Right. And you always do the decent thing, don't you, Nick? He doesn't take the bait, which makes my words seem jealous and petty.
I'll be done here soon. Is there something you need?
Tell your little friend to keep my boots. They look good on her. Nick raises his eyes to look up at her house. I quickly lower the binoculars, even though he can't possibly tell I have them from all the way over there. If he knew I was spying on him with binoculars, well, I'm not sure what he would do. Probably nothing, but the whole thing is embarrassing.
I'll be back later,
he mumbles. Then he disconnects the call. Even though I shouldn't, I keep watching them. They don't quite manage to get her car unstuck, which isn't surprising, because we got hit hard by snow. But it means they return to the motel together. At one point, she stumbles in the snow and he catches her. She's still got my boots on. I wonder if she really will keep them. The thought is like a knife in my chest. I doze off after that. I always get so tired in the afternoon. Sometimes, if Nick is around, I ask him to put me back in bed, but most of the time I just sleep in my wheelchair. It's easier that way. When I wake up, Nick is in her room. I reach into the drawer by the bed and pull out my binoculars so I can get a better look. They're sitting together on the bed. No, not just sitting together. He's rubbing her back. They're talking, but I can't hear what they're saying. I wonder if I can persuade Greta to put a listening device in room 203. No, too far. My heart is pounding as I watch him. But Nick isn't doing anything wrong. They're just sitting together and talking. There's nothing wrong with talking. Until they start kissing. Chapter 35. I can't believe what I'm seeing. He swore to me he would never do anything like that again. Yet here he is, kissing another woman. Breaking his marriage vows for a second time. Not that I'm surprised. I mean, that's why I got the binoculars. It's a little different this time. They're not making out like he was with Christina. He kisses her, then he jumps up off the bed. He's gesturing with his arms. Then he looks out the window. Shit. He sees me. I lower the binoculars and throw them onto the bed. Did he see the binoculars? I'm not sure about that. I hope not. Even without the binoculars, I can see him exit the other woman's room, probably coming over here to grovel. Again. I have to put those binoculars away quickly before he spots them. Then I have to decide if I'll forgive him. I probably will. It gets easier each time, and I have to admit, I don't know what I would do without him. Even more than 2 years ago, Nick has become my caregiver. That is the crux of our relationship now. We are not husband and wife anymore. Only caregiver and patient. Also, I don't want things to end up like last time. As much as I want to wrap my fingers around this woman's pretty little neck, I don't want to see her stabbed to death. I know what my husband is capable of now. I can't let it happen again. Unfortunately, when I tossed the binoculars onto the bed, they went all the way across the bed and rolled off the other side. So I can't just grab them and throw them into the drawer. There isn't much time either. I push back on the wheels of my chair, backing away from the bed. The bedroom isn't all that big, and it's hard to maneuver. I end up having to do the equivalent of a 5-point turn to get out of the space between the bed and the wall. By the time I've freed myself, I can hear Nick's footsteps on our stairs. He's in the house. He'll be in the bedroom any second. I make one last-ditch effort to get to the binoculars, but it's too late. He bursts into the room, his face red, his short, dark blonde hair messy from the wind.
Rosie, he gasps.
I fold my arms across my chest. That wasn't you kissing her.
She kissed me.
And I'm sure you did nothing at all to lead her on.
I didn't. Rosie, you have to believe me.
He trails off as his eyes land on the binoculars on the floor. My heart is thudding as he bends down to pick them up, a baffled expression on his face.
What the fuck is this?
I don't know what to say.
Are you spying on me?
He shakes the binoculars.
With binoculars? Seriously?
Do you blame me? Look at what I caught you doing. I expect him to protest again, but instead his shoulders sag and he tosses the binoculars on the bed.
You know what? I can't do this anymore.
Do what?
I love you, Rosie,
he says softly.
But you don't trust me anymore. You won't leave the room or have a conversation with me. You don't even let me touch you unless I'm helping you. I tried. I really did. But it's obvious you don't want me here anymore. And I'm not sure I want to be here anymore.
I stare up at him. I can see in his brown eyes that he means it. I finally pushed him too far. He's done. I see.
We're both miserable,
he says. The understatement of the century.
I think it's time to call it quits.
I had thought my life was as awful as it could possibly be, but at the moment, my heart rips in two. I agree.
I mean, do you even still love me anymore?
I look up at his face. He's still the same guy who tripped over his own feet while running track in high school because he couldn't stop staring at me. The same guy who bought me a restaurant so that I could have my dream. We've been together for 18 years, and all but the last 5 were so happy. Maybe we used up all our happiness. Maybe everybody only gets so much. Do I still love him? Of course I do. He's the only man I ever loved, the only man I ever will love. But he has a chance to be happy again. I don't. No, I say. I don't. He looks like he's about to break down, but to his credit, he keeps it together. He always does.
Fine,
he says.
I'll move out.
Fine. I feel oddly calm about the fact that the love of my life is walking out on me. You should sell this house. I'll go stay with my parents.
Fine.
Fine. Now that we have each reassured each other that everything is fine 4 times, he turns and leaves the bedroom. I watch him go. The ache in my chest is so painful, I want to scream. Please don't go, Nick. I love you. How could you ever think otherwise? But that would be wrong. The right thing is to let him go. I take out my phone. I type into the search engine, "Easiest way to commit suicide." Chapter 36. I spend a good hour searching websites, trying to figure out how I'm going to do it. The search immediately brings up a suicide hotline. But that's for normal people who are just depressed. My life is actually hopeless. I would be better off dead, and I know it. Even the websites that tell you how to do it are still trying to talk you out of it. Think of the people who care about you. Yeah, right. I've got a husband who is walking out on me. I've got my parents, who I have disappointed every step of the way. Really, the website doesn't get it. If they knew me, they wouldn't bother trying to talk me out of it. My physical limitations will make this tricky. I can't jump out the window or off a building. Hanging myself is way too labor-intensive. I'll have to go to the medication route. Nick will have to give me my pill bottles before I move out, or I can ask Dr. Heller for a prescription for a sleeping pill. I haven't quite decided on a plan yet, but I'm tired from thinking about it. I look back up, out the window, and see a woman moving around room 203. But it isn't the blonde woman. This woman has dark hair. Unless it's the same woman and she just dyed her hair, that's a possibility. Nick dropped the binoculars onto the bed, within my reach. I grab for them and focus on the window again. I zoom in close to the woman in 203. It's somebody different. Somebody older. Curvier. Definitely an unfamiliar face. I guess the blonde woman must have left, and he gave the room to a new guest. I look down at my watch. It's barely been an hour. Quick turnaround. I watch this new woman for a minute, but she doesn't seem to be doing much. Her head is bent and she seems to be looking down at her phone. I drop the binoculars on my lap. My life has become pathetic. I'm watching a woman surf the internet on her phone. I wish I could just end it all right now. Then the woman's eyes lift from her phone. She's looking straight at the window. Right at me. I push my hand against my wheels, backing up a foot. At least she didn't catch me holding the binoculars. But there's something about this woman that's making me uneasy. Not jealousy. That's become a very familiar emotion lately. Something else unnerving. My phone buzzes from where I left it on the bed. I swivel my head and see a text from Nick. "I can help you get into bed tonight." I grit my teeth. I don't want his pity. Granted, it's something he helps me with every night, so I can see why he feels bad about abandoning me. But I'll manage on my own. I've practiced it a few times since that night I went crashing to the floor. I type in my reply, "Don't worry about it." "Fine, but I'll bring you dinner. Don't say no." I want to tell him not to bother, but that would be stupid. I have become horribly dependent on him over the last 5 years. If I'd let him turn the dining room into a bedroom like he wanted, I wouldn't have this problem. But I've been stubborn. Well, he'll be rid of me soon anyway. I look out the window again. The dark-haired woman in room 203 is gone, although she left the light on in her room. I scan the parking lot and see only one car, which must belong to that woman. But then I notice the parking lot around the building that used to be Rosalie's. The blonde woman's car is still there. Well, that's strange. I assumed when I saw somebody else in her room, she must have checked out. And Nick himself said that she was very eager to leave. Now that the plow has done its job, why hasn't she taken off? Again, I get that uneasy feeling. But really, it's none of my business. Nothing here is any of my concern anymore, including Nick. If he wants to make out with all the guests, that's his business. I wish I could stop missing him. I reach for my phone and start scanning through the photos. I haven't taken any pictures in the longest time. I go back in time to 7 years ago. Nick got the idea to do a theme night at the diner, and that particular night we were doing 80s night. I had on a headband and leg warmers, and I had crimped my hair. Nick was wearing double denim, denim jeans with a denim jacket, and he slicked back his hair. We snapped pictures of each other, both of us in the middle of laughing at how stupid we looked. Then I snapped a selfie, but Nick ruined it by kissing me in the middle. We looked so happy. We were happy. I can't even remember what it felt like to be so happy. After I'm gone, Nick will meet someone else. I'm sure he'll be sad about me for a while, but he'll move on. He'll find some other woman to have this kind of happiness with. I'll just be a distant memory by then. And he can start a family with her. He deserves to be happy. He's a good guy. I'm not sure if I believe he killed that woman 2 years ago. He's not capable of it. We'll probably never know what really happened to her. I look up from my phone as some movement from outside the window catches my eye. It's coming from all the way across the parking lot at my old restaurant. There's somebody in front of the blonde woman's car. At first, I think it's the blonde woman, but she's wearing a different coat. I grab my binoculars again to get a better look. It's the dark-haired woman staying in room 203. What on earth is she doing? Then she looks up, straight at our house. Her eyes point directly at me. I drop the binoculars, my heart pounding. She doesn't look away. What is going on? She's rifling around in her purse, looking for something. She pulls something out of her purse, but it's much too far away to see without the binoculars. Cautiously, I bring them back up to my eyes just as she pulls the object from her purse. I can't see what the object is, but it glints in the moonlight. Could that be a knife? Oh my God, does she have a knife? Why would this woman have a knife? And what does she plan to do with it? And then she moves in the direction of our house. My heart is pounding painfully. What is she doing? Why is she coming here with a knife? Is she angry that I was watching her? I throw the binoculars onto the bed like they're made of fire. She couldn't have seen that I had them. And even if she did, she wouldn't kill me over it, would she? It's not like I saw anything terrible. I just saw her sitting in her room, that's all. She's definitely moving toward the house. There's no doubt about it. And she's still got that knife gripped in her hand. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. And now she's at our front door. I hear her knock, but I stay perfectly still. But then a horrible thought occurs to me. Nick may not have locked the front door. We were always lax about locking doors. After all, it's pretty deserted out here, and we never had much worth stealing. And then I hear the footsteps coming from downstairs. Oh my God, she's inside. I grab my phone. The first thing I do is text Nick. Please come here now. Somebody is in the house. Then I dial 911, although it will be far too late by the time they arrive. "Emergency services," a female voice says.
"Please help me," I croak. "There's an intruder in my house."
"I'm sorry, I can't. You're saying..."
"Great. The storm must have damaged the closest cell phone tower." The footsteps are growing louder, and now I hear a loud creak. She's on the stairs. I don't have much time. "Please." Tears leap into my eyes. "You've got to help me. There's somebody in my house. In the house next to the Baxter Motel on I-93N.
"Ma'am, can't..."
And now the phone is dead. The creaking noise stops. She must have reached the top of the stairs. In 2 seconds, she'll be in my bedroom with that knife. She's going to kill me. Isn't this what I wanted, though? I was just looking up how to kill myself on Google, and now this stranger is going to do the job for me. Why am I calling 911? I should open the door for her, welcome her. Except I realize at this moment that I don't want to die. As my heart pounds rapidly in my chest, it's like a fog has lifted from my brain. The fog that's been coloring every moment of my life for the last 5 years. My life isn't hopeless, and I don't want to die. I want my restaurant back. I want to get those contractors in and convert the kitchen so I can use it again, even if I can't stand or walk. I want to do a course of physical therapy so that I can take care of myself again and I don't have to depend on Nick for every little thing. And I want Nick. I don't want him to leave. I don't want him to find some other woman and be happy with her. I want him to be happy with me again. I want to start a family with him. But most of all, I want him. I want him so badly, I don't want to die before seeing him again. The door to my bedroom swings open. The dark-haired woman is standing there in her pea-green winter coat, a knife glinting in her right hand. I push my hands against the wheels of my chair and hit the wall behind me. "You!" she hisses at me. I raise my hands in the air. "I'm sorry. Whatever you think I did, I'm sorry."
"You know what happened to my sister," she snaps at me.
"Your sister? Is she the sister of the blonde woman?" She raises the knife and takes a step towards me.
"Don't play dumb."
I glance down at my phone. Nick hasn't responded to my text. He probably hasn't even seen it. He'll read it just in time to discover my dead body. I don't know what you're talking about.
Liar.
Please. A tear escapes my right eye. I didn't do anything to your sister, I swear. She takes another step forward. Her eyes are pools of darkness staring into mine.
"I never said you did."
Chapter 37. Rob, 3 hours earlier.
Most of the time, the first thing I do when I get home is take a shower. Claudia requires it. Not that it's a terrible idea. When you're working on people's toilets, you get your hands dirty. Claudia claims there's grease and grime permanently ground into the creases of my hands, but that's not true. I can get them clean if I want, if I scrub for a long time. Today was the kind of job where you come home and want to shower right away. There was a clog in the pipe that just wouldn't come free. I worked at it forever before I figured out what it was. It was a dead rat. No, not a dead rat. A frozen dead rat. Half a frozen dead rat. So when I walk through the front door of my house, yeah, I want a shower. And after that, a nice dinner with Claudia. Although that's one of those things that's gotten more and more rare lately. Everything is a fight these days. I don't even know why. I work hard all day, and all I want to do is go home and relax at the end of the day with a nice cold beer. You think I want to fight with my wife? I don't. The house is dark when I get inside. I swear Claudia told me she didn't have any clients this afternoon, on account of the snow. Claudia! I call out. No answer. I don't know where she could be. Maybe she's looking for Quinn, although I don't know why she thinks she'll be better at it than the police. Unless she knows something she's not telling me, which might be true. I don't get Claudia's relationship with Quinn. Quinn is fine. She's nice enough. Quiet compared with my wife. Her husband is an asshole, but who cares? Claudia spends so much time with Quinn, but sometimes I wonder if they even like each other. Claudia is always whining about Quinn. To be fair, she whines about everything, but especially about Quinn. Quinn's fake blonde hair, Quinn's giant house, how Quinn wouldn't give us any money to help when our roof collapsed last year and wrecked our attic. Not that we need money from the Alexanders. I do fine as a plumber. It's a very good living. Maybe I'm not rich like Derek Alexander, but I could afford to fix my own damn roof. I didn't want their charity. I wouldn't have taken the money if they offered it. I head up the stairs, trying not to think about where Claudia might be. I don't even know if I care. There was a time when I might have come home and told her about the rat in the pipe, and she would have laughed. But these days, she wouldn't want to hear it. I strip off my dirty clothing and go straight in the shower. I turn it up as hot as it gets, so hot I might get second-degree burns, but it will be worth it. It's cold outside. And I installed a shower nozzle to improve the pressure. It was Claudia's request, but I think I like it more than she does. The water runs over my hair, which, admittedly, isn't much to speak of lately. Claudia likes to point out I'm losing my hair and that it makes me look like an old man. It's a favorite topic of hers. I told her I'll just shave it all off, but she doesn't want that either. I don't know what the hell she wants. My head is throbbing dully from the stress of getting that goddamn rat out of the pipe. I reach for my forehead and my fingers graze the scar on my hairline. I got that scar a year ago, and it still throbs sometimes. Claudia and I were in a fight, yelling and screaming and, yes, throwing things. I can't even remember what the fight was about, but she picked up a paperweight and threw it at my head. 5 stitches. She felt bad about it, though. Drove me to the ER. Was real nice for a good few weeks after. No fighting. When I climb out of the shower, I wrap a towel around my waist and stare at my reflection in the mirror. I look tired. Yeah, I'm losing my hair, but I don't look that different from the day Claudia and I met. But somehow she's gotten sick of looking at me. I tap the medicine cabinet open. We got a lot of pill bottles in there. I don't know what the hell half of them are. They all belong to Claudia. I rifle through half-full bottles and finally find the Tylenol. I shake 2 of them into my hand and swallow them dry. Maybe that will help with the headache. When I get out of the bathroom, it's strangely quiet. Claudia! I call out. No answer. Claudia still isn't home. Where the hell is she? It's getting late. Usually we have dinner around now. I throw some clothes on, and while I'm buttoning my jeans, I hear a ding from the hallway. It's the dryer. Before Claudia left for wherever she was going, she must have put a load of clothes in the dryer. That's another problem Claudia's got with me. I never do the wash. Whenever I bring up having a baby, she always says that. How are you going to help me take care of a baby if you won't even do the laundry? I don't know what one thing has to do with the other. Everyone else I know who got married when we did has a kid or 2 by now. What are we waiting for? But if I need to do the laundry to prove myself to her, hell, I'll do it. I don't mind. It's easier than getting a dead rat out of a pipe. I go out to the hallway where our washer and dryer are set up. I take the load out of the dryer. It's mostly Claudia's stuff. Shirts and scrubs. I almost think maybe I shouldn't do it because I'll fold her shirts wrong, and that will be another thing I did wrong today. You can't win. But then I say to hell with it. Better to try. I fold Claudia's shirts the best I can. I build a little stack of them on our bed, and I'm almost proud of it. I recognize a lot of the shirts. She still has that shirt with the silhouette of the Eiffel Tower on it. She wore that the day we met. I remember because I liked how she had the French name and the French shirt. I just liked her, though. Mostly that. I do a good job with the folding. I mean, it's a nice little pile of shirts. I think I folded them right. She'll be happy. She's got to be happy with this. For once. Claudia keeps her shirts in the big dresser in our room. I open up the drawer and push some of the clothing aside to make room for the neatly folded clean shirts. And that's when something falls out of the pile of shirts that was already in the drawer. It's a phone. I pick it up and turn it over in my hand. It's a burner phone. One of those phones you get when you don't want somebody to track you. What the hell is my wife doing with a burner phone? I flip it open. I notice a bunch of missed calls on the screen. I think about calling the number back, but I don't. I want to know what the deal is with this phone first, before I start calling a number and acting like an idiot. There are a bunch of text messages on the phone, all from the same number. I open up the most recent one. I can't wait to see you. What the? I sink onto the bed as I read through the text messages one by one. It gets much worse. She just went out. See you soon. Rob won't be home till late. Come over. I can't wait to get you naked. You're all I can think about. Well, great. Claudia is messing around with another guy. Am I surprised? I don't even know. Am I pissed off? Hell yes. How could she? How could she do something like that to me? To us. I knew she wasn't happy with me, but what the hell? We could have talked it out. Marriage counseling or some shit like that. I squeeze the phone, feeling it almost crack in my hand. I want to throw it across the room and watch it shatter. I know I shouldn't. This is the only evidence I have that she's been messing around on me. But the urge is almost too strong. And then the phone rings.
Chapter 38.
It's the same number that's been texting her and calling her. The guy. He's trying to reach her. She's probably forgotten about some get-together they had because she's been too focused on Quinn. Some of my anger fades. Claudia is going through a lot right now with Derek being killed and Quinn maybe being held hostage. Not that it's any excuse for what she did, but she's already distraught. That doesn't mean I'm not going to answer this phone and tell this guy to stay the hell away from my wife. So I click the button to accept the call. Hello, asshole, I say through my teeth. There is a long pause on the other line. He's probably shocked Claudia didn't pick up and wondering if he should hang up. It doesn't matter. I'm going to find him either way.
Who am I speaking to?
A voice says. It's a male voice, deep and overly formal. It's not what I expected. I'm Claudia's husband, I say, and you're busted. I want you to leave her alone from now on. You got me? Another long pause.
This is Robert Delaney?
Yeah, who'd you think it was? A throat clears on the other line.
Mr. Delaney, this is Officer Higgins. We found this phone number on a burner phone in the pocket of your brother-in-law, Derek Alexander.
My world tilts sideways as my mouth drops open. What? There is shuffling on the other line while I sit on the bed, gripping the phone so hard that it hurts my fingers. I've almost driven myself crazy by the time I hear another voice come on the line.
Mr. Delaney, this is Deputy Dwyer.
Scott Dwyer has been on the police force since I've lived here. As far as I know, he's a good man and a good cop. But none of that makes me feel any better. Deputy, I choke out. What's going on?
Mr. Delaney, is this your phone?
No, I burst out. Christ, no, I found it.
Found it where?
The answer to this question is going to get Claudia in a world of trouble. But I can't lie. Even if I wanted to, I wouldn't. I found it in Claudia's dresser drawer. There's another long silence on the other line. I can only imagine the conversation going on right now.
Where are you, Mr. Delaney?
Dwyer finally says. I'm home.
Is your wife there as well?
No.
Are you expecting her home soon?
I didn't even expect her not to be here. I let out a laugh that sounds strangled. But yeah, I think she'll be home soon.
Don't go anywhere, Mr. Delaney. I'm on my way.
My hair is still damp from the shower by the time Deputy Dwyer's police car pulls up in front of my house. Right after we hung up, I went down to the kitchen, poured myself a shot of scotch, and downed it in one gulp. I should be sober for when I talk to the police, but the hell with it. I needed a drink. It won't make me drunk, just something to get my hands to stop shaking. I'm already rising off the sofa when Dwyer makes it to the front door. I've got the door open a half second after he hits the doorbell. He's wearing his blue cop uniform, and I'm glad he doesn't try to shake my hand because my palms are cold and damp.
Hello, Mr. Delaney,
he says.
Sorry to disturb you. Can I come in?
I wordlessly step aside to let him enter my home. Scott Dwyer is around 30, with hair that looks reddish in the overhead lights of our living room. He looks like he might have had freckles when he was younger, but they faded. Claudia once said in a disparaging kind of way that Quinn dated Scott Dwyer when they were in high school. She laughed when she talked about how Dwyer showed up at their door like a puppy dog, always searching for Quinn. I wonder what Dwyer thinks happened to Derek Alexander. I wonder if he thinks Quinn killed him. Can I get you something to drink, Deputy? I ask as I lead him to the sofa. I suddenly worry he can smell scotch on my breath. Water, I mean. He shakes his head and settles down on the cushions of our worn blue sofa.
No, thanks.
I sit down on the love seat across from him. Claudia is always saying we need new furniture. Every time she goes over to Quinn's house, she goes on a rant about how our stuff isn't as nice as theirs. But our stuff is fine. You don't have to own a $10,000 leather sofa. So, I dig the phone out of my pocket and hold it out to him. Here it is, if you want it. Damn straight he wants it. He reaches for it, flips it open, and stares at the screen. I sit there watching him as he scrolls through the text messages, the same way I did. I wait patiently, but I'm sitting on my hands. After a couple of minutes, he finally focuses his attention back on me.
Where did you find the phone?
I was putting away Claudia's laundry. I found it tucked between two shirts.
So it was hidden?
Yeah. My jaw tightens. You can see why.
Yes,
he says.
Did you suspect Claudia was having an affair at any point?
No, never. Although now it makes me feel stupid to say it. I should have known. But how could I? I was too busy supporting my family, digging rats out of pipes and all that crap.
Were you and Claudia close to Derek and Quinn?
Claudia and Quinn were close. I cough into my hand. Well, I thought they were.
Do you think Claudia could have hurt Quinn?
I frown. Wait, do you think Claudia might have been the one who stabbed Derek? And done something to Quinn?
Deputy Dwyer folds his arms across his chest. We're just trying to explore every possibility.
Oh, I breathe. Yeah, okay. Makes sense.
Do you think she might have, Mr. Delaney? Do you think she's capable of it?
I reach out and touch the scar on my hairline, the one that required 5 stitches in the emergency room. Yes, I say. She's capable of it.
Chapter 39. Claudia. I had it all planned out perfectly yesterday. I had a 2 o'clock massage client, and as soon as I finished with her, I was going to head over to Quinn's monstrosity of a house. Except, I wasn't going there to see my sister. Yes, it's true. I've been sleeping with my sister's husband for the last 6 months. I should probably use the past tense, since Derek will not be sleeping with me anymore, never again, given that he's lying on a slab in the morgue.
after she murdered him. I can't even think about it. The sight of his dead body lying on the kitchen floor will be burned in my eyes forever. That bitch. Derek is superb in bed. Quinn never even mentioned that to me. She didn't even appreciate it. I started sleeping with him because, well, long story short, I hate my sister. Surprise, surprise. I didn't always hate my sister. When our parents were alive and life was easy, we were close enough. But then they died. Not just that, but they died on their way to Quinn's stupid play. And they left us with nothing. I was at the end of my freshman year of college. I had plans. Of course I did. And none of those plans involved babysitting my sister for the next 4 years. I wanted to finish college and go on to law school. That was my dream since I was a kid. But after our parents died, Quinn had nobody. Our closest relative was a third cousin out in the Midwest. I figured she could go there and stay with her for a few years. Then our cousin called me and started making me feel guilty. She said she and her husband didn't have enough money, and why couldn't I take care of her? You are 18, after all. She's your own sister, for goodness sake. So I did it. I became Quinn's guardian. Naturally, I had to drop out of college, get a minimum wage job, and borrow money to keep from losing the house. All the while, Quinn went to high school, and then she went on to college. Meanwhile, I never found my way back to college. After 4 years out of the game, it felt like another world. So I got my degree in massage therapy instead. Married Rob. It wasn't what I dreamed of, but it was good enough. But then I saw Quinn living the good life. She finished college and got a good job at the bank. She met this obscenely gorgeous man, and he fell hopelessly in love with her because she's always been prettier than me. I used to be the smart one, but a fat lot of good it did me without an education to back it up. Whenever I would see Quinn with Derek, I would think of the guy I got stuck with, the balding plumber, and feel a surge of jealousy. Why did her life have to work out so well and mine so badly? Then she married Derek. They built this obscenely large house and spent a fortune furnishing the place. And all she did was complain about him, because Derek was mean to her. Well, guess what? Rob is mean to me too, and I don't get to live in a palace. She just didn't get it. She didn't appreciate everything I gave up for her. She never even thanked me. Last year, the roof of our house collapsed during a storm. Our attic filled with water, which then leaked down into our bedrooms. I remember standing outside the house with Quinn, showing her the damage. "How awful," she remarked. "It's eating right through all the wood," I told her. She frowned at me. "But you can fix it, right?" "Yes, but it'll cost a bundle." I stood there, waiting for her to offer to help. Derek was rolling in money, and even Quinn earned 4 or 5 times as much as I did from my massage clients. "Well, at least you can fix it," she said. That was it. No offer to help the sister that had sacrificed so much for her. And it wasn't the first time, either. She always expected me to be there for her, but she was never there for me. When Rob got laid off a few years back, she took some trip off to Bermuda with her boyfriend. She never cared about me. It was always the Quinn show. Can you blame me for hating her? Wouldn't anyone? You might wonder how I ended up sleeping with Derek. Like I said, Quinn is the pretty one. Why would Derek want to be with me when he already had the prettier, younger sister? It happened when Quinn was away on a business trip. I had the key to her house, and she asked me to water her plants because she knew Derek wouldn't do it. Of course, she could have hired somebody to water her goddamn plants, instead of me making the trek all the way over and do it for her. But Quinn never thought about it like that. What better thing did I have to do than take care of her stupid overpriced plants? While I was at her house, I helped myself to her wardrobe closet. Quinn had more clothes than she knew what to do with, and even though I was a couple sizes bigger, some of her stuff still fit me, like her jackets. And even if it didn't fit me, I might get a good price for it on eBay. She would never even know it was gone. I was in the middle of trying on one of her Bottega Veneta jackets and admiring myself in the mirror when I saw a reflection that made me nearly jump out of my skin. Derek was standing in the doorway watching me. "Oh, hi." I quickly shrugged off the jacket and reached for a hanger. I was just, you know. But there was no judgment on Derek's face. He smiled at me, and he looked so handsome at that moment it made my knees weak.
"It looks better on you."
I blushed like a teenager. I didn't think it was true, but his face looked sincere. "Thanks." He came across the room and my heart sped up. He reached out and straightened the collar of my shirt. His fingers lingered there, making a tingle go down my entire body. I held my breath, not sure what to make of this turn of events. Sometimes when I was visiting, Derek would flirt with me a bit or maybe wink suggestively. Truth be told, I had a crush on him. It was hard not to.
"You're a masseuse, right?"
he said. "Yes," I managed. Men rarely left me breathless, but there was something about Derek. He rubbed at his shoulder.
"You know, I have this terrible crick in my neck. I was wondering if you might take a look."
"I could do that." My body tingled at the thought of getting Derek on my massage table. "When do you have in mind?"
"How about right now?"
"I don't have my massage table." His lips quirked up.
"Couldn't we use the bed?"
I felt suddenly breathless, but I managed to nod. "Yes, we could." I watched Derek strip down in front of me to his underwear. I've never seen my sister's husband naked before, and I have to say, he was spectacular. Like a sculpture. He lay down on the bed, face down, waiting for me. I rubbed my hands together to warm them. I didn't have any of my oils or lotions, so I ran my bare fingers along his broad shoulders. I started working the palms of my hands into his trapezius, kneading his taut muscles. He moaned at my touch.
"You're good at this,"
he commented. "It's my special skill."
"Do you have any other special skills?"
Before I could answer, he rolled over. His eyes met mine, and my body melted. He sat up and pressed his lips against mine. I have never been kissed like that. Rob wasn't capable of it. Neither were any of the other men I had kissed in my life. Derek was different.
I knew it right away.
That was the first time we ever had sex, in my sister's master bedroom while she was away on a business trip. At first, I was sleeping with Derek because I was wildly attracted to him, and also to get back at my sister for all the sacrifices she never appreciated. But I got to really like him. After a session together, I didn't just throw my clothes back on and run out. We would lie together in bed, talking, for as long as we dared. He would run his fingers through my hair, staring into my eyes.
"I think I chose the wrong sister,"
he told me last week. I whispered back, "It isn't too late, you know."